We want to get into that and all things Premier League football today. And I'm delighted to say that we have our guest for Monday joined and ready to chat all things Premier League football. A man who rejoins the WFD airwaves after an extensive absence. He's not injured, but he's not fighting fully fit today either. We bring him on as our super sub, Mr. Jonathan Liu from The Telegraph, joining us here on WFD. John, I hear you're not feeling 100% today, but we appreciate you making the effort and coming on the show today, my man.
Not a problem, Ollie. I'm not 100% fit, but I'm prepared to fight for my place, do it for the fans.
I'm sure they'll be giving you a warm welcome, that's for sure, as you step into the game, my mate. I noticed today you've been discussing something that maybe our American viewers obviously won't be too linked to, but obviously anybody that else listens from the UK and whatnot will be very interested to be discussing about this BT Sport and the £900 million purchase of exclusive Champions League rights. Just quickly, Jonathan, I don't want to dwell on it for too long, but what does this mean for the Champions League as a competition as a whole? Does it have a big impact with this amount of money being thrown about by a television company?
Well, specifically, it's a big thing for the English clubs, because in the Champions League, TV money is kind of divvied up by country, and this kind of £900 million flows into the coffers of whichever English teams happen to be competing in the Champions League in that given season. So it has an impact on from that side of it. It also makes the Europa League a lot more prestigious from 2050, because the winner obviously gets a Champions League place from then on. And it's just money flowing into the coffers of what is, I guess, now the most prestigious and most lucrative tournament in the world.
It's a big loss for the general public of the UK that aren't willing to shell out on Sky Sports and BT Sport. And is it going to be a big impact on those who already have these? Because surely Sky won't be dropping their price. BT will be raising their price to accommodate this new huge amount of money that's been invested into live football. I mean, the repercussions for the general public are pretty bad at this.
Yeah, it's more for less, essentially, which is, I suppose, the way of the world, as anybody who's tried to buy a pint in London over the last few years has found. It's just, Sky won't drop their prices. What we'll be seeing is an incredibly fierce bidding war for the next major sporting rights to come up. Things like, for example, the Ryder Cup golf or tennis Grand Slam, things like that. And I guess, it is going to push prices up. And it's going to be harder for viewers on possibly not the biggest budget to try and watch everything or try and watch things they want. And the corollary of that is going to be the flourishing of pirate sites, which we can't condone, but that's really what's going to happen.
It is going to have repercussions all around football fandom. But for the fans this weekend, everybody was just mainly looking at what was going on the pitch. And after so much discussion about Ashley Young and diving, and then you head to Stamford Bridge and it crops up again with Ramirez. Jonathan, West Brom, how hard done by should they be feeling this weekend?
It's twice as crushing, I guess, as if they had been drawing and Chelsea had scored a late winner. It's 2 points dropped. It's not 1 point. It was this huge totemic result. It would have been Jose Mourinho's first home league defeat as Chelsea manager. And yeah, they will be feeling, we're feeling crushed. You saw Ben Foster tweeting just a few minutes afterwards. I won't use the word, but he didn't like it. He didn't like the decision one bit. It's one of those decisions that really kind of sends you, like the West Ham coach going back up to the West Midlands after that game would have been completely silent. It would have been absolutely steaming. And anybody's kind of played in a football game or whatever, or just got a rough piece of dusting. They'll just feel as though they've been kicked in the balls.
Where is this Chelsea side going wrong at the moment when it does slip up in Premier League football? Because it's very much still the same side, aside from Eto'o and Willian, as from last season. So why are they just not as cohesive under Mourinho as they were under Benitez?
I don't think the back four is as solid as it was. Like, it's definitely not looked as solid as it did last season. You've got Azpilicueta, who's been a great, you know, it was great going forward. I still don't think he's the equal of Ivanovic or Ashley Cole at the back. He's been playing at left back a little bit of late. John Terry, the slow and mournful decline of John Terry, like a sort of sponsored sea lion at London Zoo, continues apace. You've got Gary Cahill, who missed whole parts of last season, probably isn't quite as fully integrated and into this kind of well-oiled machine as he'd like to be. And then there's David Luiz, who is, of course, David Luiz. So you've got this Chelsea side who are still kind of, as a back five, still kind of feeling their way around each other a little bit. Some are coming, some are going, and they're not quite gelling as a unit. And that's led to some sloppy goals being conceded.
Do you buy into that Mourinho's not happy with the players that he has in the squad, and we're going to see vast changes to be that more disciplined, defensive, boring, dare I say it, Mourinho style that we saw at Chelsea when they were so successful under him so many years ago?
Well, yeah, for all this talk from Mourinho of an expansive, free-flowing side made in Chelsea and stuff probably filled with complete moron with posh accents. That's a joke. it's going to be the big games. If you look at how Jose Mourinho sets up his side in big games, that's really the telltale sign of what his philosophy is. And if you look at the early season game at Old Trafford, no striker, a very cautious outlook, and that I really think is the old Mourinho in a way. And in the big games, he's still going to revert to that kind of that cautious streak in him.
Elsewhere around the Premier League, Jonathan, this weekend, there were big games all over the place and huge results that would impact and will impact on the Premier League title race this season, I'm sure. Before we talk about Manchester United and Arsenal on Sunday, the game before that, why can't City go to Sunderland and get anything? It's happening time and time again. What is it about the Stadium of Light for Manchester City?
It's an away problem for Manchester City. They've actually got one of the worst away records in the entire Premier League. It happened at Villa, it happened at Cardiff, and Sunderland as well. And they look incredibly shaky for long periods against West Ham before coming up with a win there. It's got to be an attitude problem. It's got to be because the team is not being set up markedly different away from home than it is at home. So what you've got to assume it is it's a certain it's a kind of mental distinction that their players are making between home games and away games, and they're approaching it with perhaps maybe 1-2% less vigour than they would need to claim a victory at these sort of places. They've had a bit of bad luck, but the stats are showing that they're not really knocking the ball around anywhere like as fluently as they should be doing.
There's still changes and continuous changes from Pellegrini to his starting lineups. Very little consistency in terms of the midfield and the back four in the players that play. Do you think he's still not sure of which players link and play well with each other, the best in his squad? Or is it this just him just rotating things around to try and keep everybody happy?
The main problem they've had is two well-delivered crosses. They look incredibly shaky in the last few minutes at Cardiff when they started swinging the ball in. And now I think why he's brought in Di Michaelis, despite his obvious lack of pace, mobility, or style. You've got Javi Garcia, who's fine with the ball on the ground, but is still liable to get beat in the air. Vincent Kompany, who's been a big loss for them when he's been out. And Nastasic, who, again, has looked very good in some games and pretty average in others. So I think there are a lot of potential weaknesses in this City defence, and there is no one single defensive partnership that really addresses all of them. That's the conundrum that Pellegrini's got to solve.
This is a massive win in terms of Gus Poyet and his start as a Sunderland manager. Do you think this is any indication that he is starting to get a bit of cohesion out of his side, or is this more of a case of Sunderland raised their game because one of the big boys came to town to play against them?
Yeah, I mean, you don't really need to give a team talk when Manchester City are coming to your stadium and you've got 50,000 fans. That's not a test of motivation. It's a test of tactics, and it's a test of setting up your side. And he seems to have passed that very well, as he did against Newcastle. It's these sort of, I don't like the cliche, but it's these kind of six-pointers where you're really going to feel the skills of Poyet, if indeed he is going to keep them up. I remember sitting in at the Amex Stadium after he just lost at home to West Ham. And Sam Allardyce's side had booted the ball long and harried and played a very ugly game and come away with a 1-0 win. And Poyet said afterwards, I could easily lump it long, get a 1-0 win, fine, I'll go home. I don't want that kind of football. I play for glory, and football without risk, there's no glory. The real test is going to come when he has to mix it. He has to really kind of grit out 1-0 wins, and that's where you're going to see the real test of Poyet as a manager.
The supposed disastrous season for Manchester United took a big twist in the right direction this weekend, as they were able to get 3 points against Arsenal, who are still just about top of the Premier League at the moment. United, a big win for Moyes, but for Arsenal, does this highlight the lack of depth in their squad in terms of Wenger being able to change things in that game with his substitutions, especially up front?
Yeah, but they could have seen the lack of depth on the Arsenal bench has been sort of a recurring theme for a few weeks now. It's important to remember they're still without almost an entire team of players. No Walcott, no Podolski. Oxlade's still out for several weeks. And it's kind of natural that there are going to be gaps in the squad with those sorts of injuries. I do think that they look vulnerable if something happens to Giroud, or if Giroud is becalmed as he was yesterday. It's more of an issue with, I think, Manchester United playing an exceptionally good defensive game yesterday. Arsenal will be in the title mix if they carry on the way they're playing.
What about the defensive pairing of Koscielny and Mertesacker? Obviously split up this weekend with Vermaelen filling in at centre-back instead of the German. Those two had a very good bond last season at the end of the year. Can Vermaelen slot in? He was such a big player for Arsenal even 18 months ago or so. Can Vermaelen come in and replace Mertesacker competently, do you think?
It's strange, isn't it? It does look kind of sad for Marlon Lee. That he looks like a guy who's not played very many matches, and he got beaten to a lot of 50-50 balls, a lot of second balls yesterday. He'll need a run in the side. I mean, this is the thing with all defenders, really. That first season, when not only did he stop a lot of goals, but he actually scored a lot of goals. He had a consistent run in the side. He was the first pick. These days, His pretty much his biggest job of the week is to write the captain's notes in the club programme, which he still has to do despite the fact that he's not really playing. He just needs a run on the side. He just needs, I think, him and Koscielny won't have done as much drilling in training together, obviously, as they did when they were first choice pairing. So if that is going to be a viable partnership, then they're going to take a bit of time to get to know each other again.
Few unhappy Arsenal fans with Van Persie's reaction to his goal on the weekend, but surely the time has passed for that sort of playing down the celebrations. Do you begrudge Van Persie celebrating, Jonathan? Do you think it was a little bit too OTT or unnecessary at all?
He took a season. It took him a year. I mean, he scored both close to the league games. It's nice and muted. Run back to a little handshake with his teammates. Run back to the centre circle. I think he's served his time. He's served his penance. He's had his time in the doghouse, and this clearly made a great deal to him. And if you listen to some of the people who were at the game and some of the things that were being shouted at Van Persie, I think it's only natural that he would want to react that way.
Wayne Rooney continues his stellar start to the season as well. Are we seeing Rooney more comfortable because he isn't being watched over so intently by Sir Alex Ferguson? Is this Rooney with a little less pressure on him because he knows the eyes of big Sir Alex aren't watching over him from the bench?
There is definitely a Ferguson element to it, because you remember last season, there was all this this hoo-ha about him being forced to play in this kind of advanced midfield, deep-lying playmaker, Trey-Cartista, jack-of-all-trades role, which he supposedly so disliked. Now, you'll note that in the Arsenal game, he pretty much played exactly that role. You look at his heat map, you look at his touches map, and he's pretty much playing in that same role, which he supposedly found such a distasteful job against last season. So yeah, that, I mean, there is definitely a personality element there. He ran. I think he's running like a guy who feels like he has a point to prove, but also kind of feels like the main man there, which I guess he hasn't in the last couple of seasons. He's a very psychological player, Wayne Rooney. He'll run and run and run he's got the incentive to do so. And I think he's got that at the moment.
Is this the worst time to have this sort of a big win for Moyes? With suddenly you've got the international break and everything gets broken up. Would he prefer it to just go straight headlong into the next game and ride this momentum?
Yeah, I'm not sure Moyes is that much of a momentum manager. I mean, but yeah, certainly when you come off a win like that and you've now got a break for 2 weeks, it seems to me that this there was something about that win that was kind of redolent of the way Liverpool always used to kind of nick little 1-0 wins against United. I'm not sure it'll make a huge difference in the grand scheme of things. I don't think it's a kind of a bellwether of how the title race is going to go. I still think United have got plenty of weaknesses, especially in midfield. I still think Arsenal have got a first team that is easily good enough to win the title. I think it might, you know, don't sort of take me. This is exactly what you're doing, but I know that. But this come the end of the season might be one of those results that's more of a red herring than a weather vane.
We will we shall see about United's fortunes bouncing back off this result. Just finally, Jonathan, last game I'd like to touch on with you quickly. Southampton against Hull City. I mean, what a surprise package Southampton continue to be, and they continue to get results and stay in that top three. Do you think that the players that have been pulled up to this England side are good enough to not only be in the England side, but to be considered for a place to Brazil as well next summer?
Well, we all had a little laugh about it in the last week, didn't we? About this idea of Jay Rodriguez effigies being burned in Chile and the German media coming up with how to stop Ricky Lambert and having a laugh. But, you know, they are very, very good players. And in the case of Lallana, certainly, and possibly in the case of Luke Shaw, who's not in this squad, but could well be in a future squad, they are good enough to play for top six sides. And so the fact that they are, you know, they're currently playing for Southampton is again a little bit of a red herring. They are, you know, Lallana is clearly a very, very talented player. He's two-footed, and that's what makes him such a kind of a difficult prospect. With certain wingers, you know which way they're going to go most of the time. Lallana, he can, as they say, he plays on the left, he plays on the right, and Lallana makes Messi look decidedly ordinary. And Lambert is definitely more of a kind of an up and down centre forward. He's a stopgap, I guess, for the time being. But Lallana definitely is one of those players you can really put a run together. And if he puts a run together, if he settles in, why not?
I was wondering where you're going to go with the colourful language there, Jonathan. And I have to say, I'd much rather hear that coming from the stands of a ground than what the word that would be used to fill in that. That's for sure. Can they stay there? Can they stay up there? I mean, they've faced some big teams, but they've got Arsenal and Chelsea coming up in their next two games. That's a big acid test for them, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think even if they lose those two games at the end of their calendar, I don't think if they win those two games, it'll confirm their top four credentials. What it is, I think, is what we saw with Newcastle a couple of years ago. Sometimes it takes clubs the best part of the season to work a side out. Which is not to say that Southampton will get worked out, but teams are going to get better at playing against them. It's such a distinctive style. It's such an aggressive style. Once one or two teams start to work it out, that might happen towards the end of the season. Maybe they won't enjoy the success they have done, but it's an incredibly successful system at the moment that they've got.
Jonathan, it's an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you. Always brings a smile to my face on what could easily be a dreary Monday morning for most people, but I'm sure you'll be brightening up both mine, Rafa's, and everybody else's day here at World Football Daily, mate. Thank you so much for joining us. Get yourself better and back off to bed, mate, and have a cracking week, and look forward to the England games.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Cheers, Jonathan. Thanks a lot. Jonathan Liu there from the Daily Telegraph joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Premier League football from the weekend. Southampton, will they be a top four side at the end of the season? And how will that change? Because, of course, now...